Welcome, dear listener, to episode 10 of Dirty Thoughts, Let's Talk. If you came for the dirty thoughts that make you tingle down there, you might be in the wrong place. However, if you came to find out how to manage those dirty thoughts, keeping you from being the best possible version of yourself, and would like to have some fun while doing it, then you are indeed in the right place. I'm your host and founder of The Clean Thinkers, Mike Marcella, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in to our weekly podcast. I genuinely appreciate you coming along on this journey with me and the rest of the Clean Thinkers community. Before we recap last week and get into today's material, I wanted to remind all of you dear listeners out there that if you are enjoying the podcast, if you're intrigued by the content and would like to learn more about the program, and of utmost importance, if you enjoy the soothing and sultry sounds of my voice, then please go check out our book, Dirty Thoughts, Let's Talk, Volume 1, The Introduction and the Influences on Our Thinking, which is available as an audiobook. And guess what? It is narrated by me, your dear shithead host. I've included a link to purchase the book in the show notes through either Audible, Amazon, or iTunes, but you can also simply search by my name and the title through any of those retailers. This is handy if, like me, you have no idea how to even find the fucking show notes for a given podcast. Really, I have no idea. So if you're going to them, maybe send me a note. Let me know how. Thanks. Anyway, thanks for enduring yet another shameless sales pitch, dear listener. I do appreciate it. So last week, we discussed our third influence, which corresponded to chapter 5 in the book I just shamelessly plugged. And that influence was our past experience and was what we called a mixed influence, meaning that it's a little bit internal, like our earlier influences of self-interest and feelings, but it's also a little bit external, like the additional influences we'll be discussing in the weeks to come. We talked about terrible music from the dreadful music genre of adult contemporary, aka soft rock, and pondered what may have happened to the poor souls who enjoy that type of music to lead them to have such awful taste in the first place. We then speculated it may have been past experience, but then again, who knows? We also discussed the effects of past experience on many of the choices we make, and even how it's about half responsible for who we are through its effects on our personality development. Just like our earlier influences, this one is another one with substantial potential to affect our choices and consequently our lives. In this week's episode, we're going to be sticking with past experience again, sort of. And what I mean by that is that we're going to be talking about something that has now become a part of our collective past experience, COVID. Specifically, we're going to talk about the takeaways regarding how things were handled, how we, the citizenry, then responded, and most importantly, what we can take away from this experience to help improve our thinking and our decision-making in the future. We're then going to talk about the struggles many businesses are having in finding workers after COVID and use that topic to discuss two concepts we'll cover in detail later in the program, blaming and perspective. So let's get after it. But first, before we start it in earnest, I want to talk about a quick note I have. And that even though the worst of COVID is now past, hopefully, at least here in the U.S., it's probably not ever going to be completely relegated to the past. And now there's all these different variants, so it may get bad again, too. So I don't want you to think that I'm saying COVID is a thing of the past, but parts of COVID are a thing of our past experience. Because I've seen conflicting information as to what the long-term disposition of COVID is going to be and whether there's going to be an annual booster, like with the flu or not. And so I can't offer any specific thoughts on that, but I honestly don't think we're ever going to be saying goodbye to this monster, anytime soon, at least, if ever. But either way, the future of COVID is not the topic of our discussion today. Instead, I want to talk about COVID's past and our past related to COVID, what we should have fucking learned from it, and what many of us seemed not to have. But there is still hope, because that's what the Clean Thinkers is here for, right? To help us learn. So let's take a little trip to the past again, shall we? We're going to hop in that DeLorean, but we're going to go about a year and a half back, when COVID first started. Remember that? Nobody knew what the hell to do. Because remember, it's called the novel coronavirus. It's novel. It's new. Remember? Nobody knew what to do. And so it might not be like the other coronaviruses. And it turns out it wasn't. Like the ones that cause the common cold. Yeah, they're in the, you know, the rhinoviruses. It's a little different than those. As it turns out, it's a lot different than those. But either way, the infectious disease experts, they took the information they had available to them at the time, and then they responded in a way that they thought was appropriate. And some of the things they did were ill-advised. When we look back at that in retrospect, we can say that now. And that happens to us in our lives all the time. Hindsight is 20/20. We make bad choices. We look back and say, fuck, probably could have done a different one there. But for instance, when Anthony Fauci first came out and he told people not to wear masks, whew, that was a big mistake, a very, very big mistake. Because at the time, he didn't understand enough about the disease to make such a statement. That was not a good idea. Specifically, he didn't know that almost half of the carriers were asymptomatic, or that people who are asymptomatic can still readily spread the virus. He didn't know much. No one did. He probably should have been making those statements. But even more importantly, the reason why he made that statement is important, but he didn't provide the context necessary to explain his guidance early in the pandemic that people shouldn't wear masks. And context matters, because we will reiterate this over and over again in the Clean Thinkers program. He recommended that people not wear masks because he wanted to ensure that a shortage of masks wasn't created. He wanted to prevent workers in the medical setting from being without them, which makes sense. But he didn't say that. And because he didn't say that, he left himself open to have his comments used against him in the future. He left them open to interpretation by people to serve their influences, to serve their interests, so they could use that in the future to say, hey, Fauci is flip-flopping. No, what Fauci did is he didn't have enough information. He made a bad choice. The things we say matter, and they have consequences. And when they're coming from someone in position like Fauci or Trump, they have very big consequences in the middle of a pandemic that was killing people. Because that became what amounted to ammunition for people who didn't want to wear masks. Well, Fauci said that masks weren't necessary, so now he's changing his mind, right? He's flip-flopping, like I just said. Well, no, he's not flip-flopping. What he's done now when he changed his recommendation on masks is that he updated his thinking as new and better information became available, just like we should all be willing to do. Changing his mind was not a mistake, but making that statement in a high-stakes situation, completely absent of very important context and very important background information, was a very big mistake. He didn't know enough to make the statement at the time. And here we are now, today, and now there's this whole email thing, I know, right? Christ, a fucking cracker, another goddamn email scandal. And I'm going to say this one more time, just to make sure there isn't any ambiguity, okay? Are you ready? Masks fucking work to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases like COVID. This is an objective truth determined by peer-reviewed, objective scientific research published in scholarly journals. This exists, and it is true regardless of what Fauci said, what Trump said, what the idiot news anchor on TV said, what the experts on YouTube said, and yes, that's a big fucking set of air quotes around the word expert, or what you think about it, what I think about it, what you feel about it, or any other subjective factor that has no bearing on the objective reality that masks work. No matter what Fauci's emails say, no matter what Clinton's emails say, no matter what my emails say, this is still true. The research is in the show notes. Go read it. It's right there. And in all seriousness, I'm being dead serious here. If you simultaneously hold the viewpoint that masks don't work and also refuse to read the research I've provided you to give the objective truth its due, then stop listening to my show. Seriously, stop. Because if that is the case, then you've chosen to rely on influences and have no interest in objectivity. And so I can do nothing for you. And maybe you should just go listen to Ben Shapiro or some other similar fear-mongering, conspiracy-slinging moron and hear exactly what you'd like to hear. Okay? Bye-bye. Bye. Go. See ya. Okay? All right. So for those of you who are still here, let's talk about those emails, shall we? Fauci and other experts are not infallible. And they make mistakes, just like you and I. They probably make a lot of mistakes, just like you and I. They are not gods. They are not beyond reproach, okay? The situation with Fauci's emails is just like the situation with his public statements. He made recommendations and other assertions that were inaccurate in retrospect when compared to what we ultimately learned about the disease. And he made them, once again, without the due context, maybe thinking that people weren't going to be digging up his emails. You know, I make statements in emails sometimes, and I don't have to put a background of knowledge. I don't cite everything I say in an email when I'm talking to people. I don't provide an entire page or multiple pages worth of context. Because providing context is not always easy, and it's not something we think about doing. And it's not always easy to do in his situation, too, when he was speaking in front of the public, even if he wanted to, because we live in a world where one must communicate a message in about 5 seconds before the audience moves on to the next thing. I'm shocked that podcasts exist, because it's kind of a long-form narrative, and it's a lot for people to pay attention for that long. I remember I heard a neurology professor when I was doing my biology degree, and I remember him talking about how the human attention span is about 40 minutes. And after that, you lose people. If you've ever noticed, my podcasts are all about 40 minutes long. That's by design. Okay. But ultimately, we live in a world where one must communicate a message in about 5 seconds. Okay. And it's really hard to provide all the necessary background and communicate the subtleties present in statements that will eventually become sound bites or quotes in print. And let's be honest, even if the context were provided, even if you write a long form article or you write a book, the news outlet that shares the quote or the soundbite, they still put their own spin on it and they take the little bit out that serves their narrative anyway. Because you have to be fair and balanced to lean forward into who we are, right? Yeah, whatever. Because ultimately, what I'm saying is that we need to be willing to update our thinking when new information becomes available. Like I've said earlier in this podcast, I've echoed this sentiment many, many times. If we see something on Facebook and we're all excited about seeing it and it's like, oh, all of our influences are up in the air and it's fulfilling our dopamine, stop. Take a minute and consider it because you wanted to hear it. So that's the first indicator that maybe this is not something that's true, or this is something that maybe it is true, but it's serving your influences in some way. If you're super excited about it and you can't wait to share it with everybody, take a minute and validate it first, okay? Because it would behoove us to treat our thinking and the things we share similarly to how science treats its information as an iterative process, right? Where we do not hold on to the axioms or ideas of the past as if they were irrefutable or completely static. Where we stop taking it personally and where we don't look at it as being wrong, because when we do, we then invite additional effects from and participation by our influences. Because when we're wrong, we take it personally. If we look at it as being wrong, we take it personally. So then we want to dig in and we want to fight, even when the new information is undeniable from an objective perspective. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, well, that's easy for you to say. You know, maybe you're fine with wearing masks and blah, blah, blah. No. Guess what, dear listener? I'm going to share a little secret with you. At first, I didn't want to wear a mask either once the recommendations came out, because I had heard the same guidance from the CDC early on that we shouldn't wear a mask. And Fauci said it. Okay. It made sense to me. And there's a couple of reasons why. The aforementioned shortage for medical professionals. Okay. But I thought that masks wouldn't work based on my understanding of the size of a virus versus the porosity of an N95 mask. So obviously, if the N95 mask doesn't work based on its porosity, then these shitty cloth masks and bandanas that everyone is using definitely don't work, right? Right? Yeah, well, that made plenty of sense if one doesn't bother to look at it objectively, if one wants it to keep making sense. However, that was just my initial perspective. It was my gut reaction, if you will. But I wasn't going to let that dictate my overall viewpoint, right? I wasn't going to go into a store and refuse to wear a mask and get in a fight with the checkout counter and end up on social media as a viral clip. No, I wasn't going to do that. Remember, I have this program. It's called The Clean Thinkers. You might be aware of it. Had I just left it at that, I'd be a shit guide for others, wouldn't I? If I had just said, okay, I'm all done. The answer is that, yeah, I would be a shit guide. That's the answer, okay? I would be the obese, chain-smoking cardiologist telling the patient to lay off the bacon. Yeah, okay, sure thing, chief. I'll get right after that. So instead of digging in my heels on one side or the other, I thought, that's weird they changed their position on something that seems like such a big deal. Why would they do that? What's their motivation? And there was some curiosity there too. Why would they make such a recommendation, right? Because motivation matters. Well, I couldn't come up with a reason that made sense outside of doing it for the public good. Why else is the CDC, are they part of some cabal? Probably not. They probably, you know, they're the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. So they're probably trying to prevent controlled diseases. Because I mean, sure, it could have just been some giant practical joke to make us all look silly, April Fools, but that seemed like a bit of a stretch, okay? And so since I couldn't come up with a good reason, guess what I did? I researched it myself, and when I did that research, I learned a few things. One of the first and most important things I learned was that viruses don't travel in isolation when they're exhaled or coughed or sneezed or spit at someone if you're particularly feisty, like if you're an anti-masker and you ended up in one of those videos on social media. Yeah. No, instead, viruses travel in saliva particles, which indeed can be trapped and stopped by a mask because those particles are much bigger. They're very big, in fact, on the scale of the mask's porosity. And when both the infected person and the healthy person are wearing masks, the efficiency of particles being stopped only improves by a lot. And then if you factor in recommended social distancing practices, the chances of transmission are essentially zero. And once more, if you'd like to validate this yourself, and hopefully you will because you stuck around and didn't just leave the show, the research is in the show notes, which you might not be able to find. But if you can't find them, go ahead and sign up for our email because I'll send them to you through there. So after I learned all this information, I was happy to wear a mask. Why wouldn't I be? I had objective information, and by managing my influences, I was able to arrive at this conclusion. No whining or whinging for my British dear listeners, just objective information and a rational, logical conclusion formed from that information. Okay, big deal. Now I looked like a ninja. Fine. I like it. People don't recognize me. There's so many different benefits to it. Now, don't get me wrong. I completely understand the desire to push back on mask wearing and social distancing if, and especially if, a major source of that desire is because one has gone ahead and lumped mask wearing and social distancing in with all the other restrictions that were implemented. Because myself, I was not a fan of all the shutdowns, and still to this day am of the viewpoint that things should have been handled differently. Something to the effect, and I'm not an expert, so it doesn't matter, and it's also because it's in the past, it doesn't matter, but I would have thought something like a voluntary quarantine for those at the most risk would have been better, and also for those who chose not to take the risk and limit their exposure. That should have been a choice open to people. However, the big reason that wouldn't have worked is because it would have required a concerted and collaborative effort by a government that provided the necessary infrastructure and assistance for the people who could not work, or those who chose their health and safety over going out into the world regularly, okay? However, we had a government and a good chunk of the news media aligned with said government that simply downplayed the entire pandemic publicly and pretty much ridiculed people that wanted to wear masks and, you know, take measures and quarantine as if they were big pussies. So that really didn't help matters. And so that also, of course, largely contributed to the pushback for many. But here's the kicker, okay? So that would have been nice if we could have done that. And we couldn't, obviously, for many reasons. But, you know, it would have been nice if we could have all gotten together and not been idiots. But here's the kicker. The refusal to wear masks, the refusal to practice social distancing and take other similar actions from people who didn't take the pandemic seriously, they actually prolonged the very thing they were protesting against, right? And that resulted in many, many, many people dying and, you know, businesses being closed for longer periods of time and who knows, untold economic effects. So granted, the shutdown initially, like I said, I don't think it was a good idea, but the alternative was for people to actually take this seriously and work together. So that probably wasn't going to happen either. But then to continue to push back against it after these things have already been implemented, throwing a fit pretty much like a toddler, kicking and screaming on the floor, throwing a tantrum, it only prolonged what you were fighting against. It was ridiculous. And so we had this pandemic that was objectively real, objectively dangerous, and objectively killing numerous people, okay? But now, I know there might be some of you dear listeners out there that haven't listened to podcast episode 4, and you might be finding yourself thinking something to the effect of, excuse me, the CDC released a report stating that only 6% of the people who died of COVID actually died from COVID. Now, so I'm sorry, but that is completely inaccurate. So please go check out episode 4 for more info on cause of death and all that, and, you know, how that's determined. It's very important. Go back, check episode 4. Moving on. We had this pandemic that was objectively real, objectively dangerous, and objectively killing numerous people. That's the objective evidence. And at some point, we had substantial objective information indicating the effectiveness of masks and social distancing. So then, in order to be of the opposite viewpoint, one must have been relying purely on their subjective influences. No more objective information. This was subjective influences. And of course, politics was a big one, right? You remember the political climate at the time. Groups in general as well, right? We're just trying to, if our family was thinking a certain way, or a group of friends, or, you know, if we're part of QAnon or a Proud Boy, whatever, our groups are taking a stance on this. And then to maintain part of the group and show your membership, you need to take the same stance. So you'll find reasons to take that stance. And so by doing so, all of us who were doing this, we were relying solely on motivated reasoning. And speaking of motivation, I want to pose a question to all of you, because motivations matter. Motivation is very important. And my question is, what would be the motivation for politicians, government officials, infectious disease experts, etc., to purposely destroy the economy when that is one of the most important issues in any election? Why would Gavin Newsom out here in California set himself up for a recall election while also annihilating California's own economy, which is, I mean, as a state, California's economy is bigger than a lot of nations? Because as I said, I don't agree with all the measures taken, but I also have determined from the evidence and an objective, influence-free analysis of the information that officials who recommended tight restrictions were doing so in the interest of public health. Now, sure, there were some like Andrew Cuomo in New York that were also doing it to get in front of the limelight, you know, being attention hogs. But for the most part, I think that they were doing it for the right reasons. They were getting recommendations from the people who knew what they were talking about and maybe taking too conservative of an approach, but they did what they thought was best. In fact, many of them must have been making those choices, with the exception of Andrew Cuomo, at the expense of their self-interest. Because it's not in the interest of one's career or their re-election aspirations to destroy the livelihood of their constituents. It makes no fucking sense. It makes no sense at all. I'm going to destroy my own economy, and it's going to probably do what for me as far as my next re-election? Or my long-term career aspirations is whatever. And you might say, oh, well, their long-term career aspirations might be a lobby. Now, you could make that argument, something to the effect of, well, they allowed stores like Target, Walmart, and their ilk to stay open while small mom and pop stores got closed. And sure, lobbying power might have had a small part to do with that. I can't argue that. I don't know. But if you take that argument too far, the insinuation then becomes that the pandemic was an excuse to hurt small business and help big business. And that, dear listener, sounds a bit like a conspiracy theory. That sounds kind of like plandemic type of thinking, you know, the YouTube video. Yeah. That's not a good way. Don't go down that road. Because a much simpler answer, remember, simple answers are often good, is that Walmart and Target and other stores like that stayed open because of their variety. Because they offer essentials in addition to all the other garbage they sell as well. It's hard to justify staying open based on being essential if you own a specialty dress shop, a car wash, a vape shop, or even a goddamn NFL team. I'm sorry, but we do not need, and it's not essential or necessary, to watch overpaid babies fight over an oddly shaped ball when it could result in people dying from being too close to one another. And even though shutting down all of these businesses may not have been right, it nonetheless just was, and it wasn't based on some conspiracy. Because ultimately, what I'm getting at, dear listener, is that if you hear hoofbeats, think horses and not zebras, the simplest answer is often the best, even if that answer doesn't serve our influences or our other motivations. Now, the last thing before we move on from masks, and we're going to bring vaccines into this portion of the discussion as well, too. I know, by the way, I've included some peer-reviewed info on vaccine safety in the show notes for your perusal as well. Just have a look. The last thing I want to talk about on the topic of masks relates back to the fight against masks and vaccines based on the argument of personal freedom. I'm all for personal freedom, which is why I'm ardently pro-choice. I am pro-same-sex marriage, etc. But I am not for personal freedom when it comes at the expense of the greater good or other people's safety and well-being. Being considered freedom of speech. I really appreciate Germany's take on freedom of speech, for instance. It is not just a blanket freedom of speech. You can't just say anything. Because remember what happened in Germany around the middle of the 20th century? Yeah, they learned their lesson about the power of words. So for them, freedom of speech stops at hate speech, okay? Because they saw some really bad things happen. Remember, sometimes personal freedom needs to have limits for the interest of everybody. So now we have people here in the US, the worst of the worst, in my opinion, speaking of Nazi Germany, comparing mask wearing and vaccines to the persecution and murder of Jews in Nazi Germany. Jesus Christ, you poor dears, being asked to wear a fucking mask and perhaps consider, no one's making you, to get a vaccine. A vaccine that, please recall, medical science has indicated is much safer than the alternative, which is getting sick with COVID or the other awful diseases that science has given us vaccines against. And once more, that info is in the show notes if you want to go take a look. And if, like me, once again, you don't know how to find the show notes, just sign up for our email and I'll send them to you. But getting back to personal freedom, which again, one more time, I'm a big, big personal fan of and a big supporter of. What we're doing in this case is that we're making a subjective determination that our own individual personal freedom, our medical freedom, our autonomy, or whatever, it's more important than the freedom of others, such as the freedom of a small business owner to require masks to be worn in their establishment in order to keep their employees safe and to comply with both good science and local regulations. So when we fight against that, we are therefore deeming their freedom, one is deeming their freedom more important than that of others, okay? I'm saying my freedom is more important than the freedom of the small business owner. Fuck him. That's what you're saying. And specifically when it comes to masks, one is deeming your own freedom to avoid being mildly discomforted to be more important than the freedom of the business owner to conduct business in a way that they choose and to earn an income. You can't say, I fucking support small business and then refuse to wear a mask when you go into one, okay? It doesn't fucking work that way. And then one is also, at the same time, deeming their freedom to avoid being mildly discomforted to be more important than the freedom of others not to get sick or to support their business of choice in a safe manner where their health and wellness is not threatened. The personal freedom argument ends when our personal freedom infringes upon the safety, health, and freedom of others. Because we had the freedom not to wear a mask. It was always there. We never had to wear one. We simply stay the fuck home. We don't go to places requiring masks for entry. That is our freedom of choice. Same for vaccines. You don't want to get one? Fine, don't get one. But with that choice comes potential consequences, like maybe not being able to attend certain events or travel to certain countries or do other things like that. It is your choice not to get a vaccine. Fine. Just as it is the choice of other nations to deny entry to you. Fuck you, you can't come in. And just as it is the choice of private businesses to deny entry to you as well. Fuck you, you can't come in. It's that simple. Because that, dear listener, is the nature of freedom. The point of freedom, real freedom, is for it to apply to everyone, even when it's not convenient to you, to me, or our influences. Freedom's for everybody. So what I just did there, in essence, was I offered a different perspective of the freedom argument. Because perspective matters, especially when we're assigning blame or fault or trying to rationalize our actions, right? Because it's really easy to only see things from our own perspective. Perspective of not wanting to wear a mask and wanting to be free and autonomous and, you know, not have a little bit of sweat on our upper lip, or the freedom to get a vaccine or not get a vaccine. The perspective matters. So we've talked about masks as related to COVID, which is now becoming part of the past since the mandates have now relaxed, even out here in California. But that's not to say that they're not going to come up again as the new variants continue to emerge. And we've talked about vaccines, but vaccines now, they are still very relevant. And they're relevant to help keep COVID under control, especially as these new variants emerge, which vaccines still help fight against the variants too. So sorry, before I do want to do one more thing on vaccines. I would like you to please consider getting one if you're on the fence, okay? I'm not telling you to, I'm asking. I'm asking you to consider, and I'm asking you to do some research. Because I understand it's a new drug. And because of that, there are always going to be side effects and unknowns. That's completely true. Anytime any new drug, anytime any new thing comes out, there is inherent risk. So what I'm asking, what I'm requesting, is to do a relative risk comparison. I'm going to give you some information here that might help. Which is riskier? The disease that has killed over 4 million people as I record this, or the vaccines that may have killed around 5,000? 4 million to 5,000. Big difference in numbers. And I'm aware that the anti-vax and anti-mask crowds like to focus on death rates. So if you're keeping count for the vaccines, that death rate is about 0.0017%. And by the way, I highlighted may just a bit ago because that 5,000 number is probably very inflated, since the FDA requires medical providers to report deaths of anyone who received the vaccine, even if a definitive causal relationship cannot be established. So that 5,000 plus number, it was a little over 5,000, that's a may have been caused by it. There no definitive causal relationship has been established for those. More needs to be understood first, okay? So let's say that even if that 5,000 worst case number is real, which it's likely not, and therefore if it is real, and therefore the 0.0017% death rate is real, that rate, it's about equivalent to one's lifetime chances of being killed by a tornado, and about double one's chances of being mauled to death by an animal. We are seven times more likely to be killed by a cop, seven times more likely to be killed by a cop than to be killed by the vaccine, six times more likely to die in an airplane, and 86 times more likely to die just by taking a fucking walk. So if you're avoiding the vaccine based on your chances of dying or experiencing serious deleterious side effects from it, and if we follow the same logic for everything else, then you should stop going outside. You should avoid all animals and cops, and for the love of God, do not get on an airplane or take a walk. Holy shit, because they are fucking dangerous. 86 times more likely to die taking a walk. Sounds pretty silly when we consider it from that perspective, right? Perspective, yeah. It sure does sound silly when you consider it from a different perspective. So on to our discussion of perspective in earnest. We're going to keep with COVID in a way, because our next topic stems from COVID, and that topic is how many employers are struggling right now to find workers. Now, I've seen and heard and read about many and many different perspectives on this. A common one is that people simply don't want to work anymore. Okay. So what are you telling me then? That the pandemic made people lazier. Is that a common side effect? I wasn't aware of that one. I'd have to look into it. Check out the research. Because clearly, if you take an objective, influence-free look at it, these jobs were filled before the pandemic began, right? So people were there working them. But now they're not. And why? Why did they develop this newfound laziness? Did they find a new job? Perhaps. But I'd say the vast majority are probably on unemployment, right? That's the insinuation, and it's probably also the truth. Okay, fine, they're on unemployment. But let's talk about the numbers here. And we'll do it specifically here in California, where I am based, where the minimum wage is pretty high compared to the rest of the country on average. Because here in California, the minimum wage is $14 an hour for any employer with over 26 employees. And for any employer with 25 employees or fewer, it's $13 an hour. Okay, 14 for big companies, 13 for small ones. So for our minimum wage workers, that's $560 per week for the big employers and $520 per week for the small employers when they're working. Now, if you've never been to California, you've never lived here, $520 a week is not enough to survive on. Doesn't work that way out here. Anyway, so regular unemployment benefits for these folks, which they had no choice over, okay? They had to file for unemployment to keep paying the bills and everything when the pandemic forced them out of their job. This happened. They didn't voluntarily leave, okay? Didn't work that way. So remember that part. So the unemployment benefits for them would have been $281 per week and $260 per week, respectively, before the pandemic. $281 per week for the big companies, $260 per week for the small ones. It's not a lot of money. However, with the additional $300 per week federal pandemic unemployment compensation on top, that comes to about $581 per week and $560 per week, which, if you're paying attention, you will notice is a higher dollar amount than they'd earn by going back to work. So for the big companies, they'd earn $21 more a week by staying at home on unemployment. And for the small companies, they'd earn $40 more per week by staying on unemployment. So now, friends, I'm going to tell you something about myself. I'm not a lazy person. I work my ass off between my business, between being a parent, being a husband, and doing so all while maintaining physically active and participating in multiple hobbies. Okay, it's really a lot of work to start your own business. And it's not even that I'm starting a business that of something that existed. I'm not just selling a service that people already know. I'm selling a concept. So it's a lot of work, okay? I've been working pretty much nonstop since I was 15. I've earned 2 degrees, and both of those degrees I earned while always maintaining at least one job, carrying up to 3, and doing so with a full schedule. I've worked in the oil fields, doing like grunt labor in the oil fields. I'm not lazy. I've run triathlons. I've done tough mudders. So not to toot my own horn, but I am the absolute opposite of lazy. But if I were making more money not to work, I would not be going to work. Not a fucking chance. Now, granted, I'd be using that time productively to try and improve my income elsewhere, maybe even going back to school or something, with that baseline amount coming in, but that's besides the point. The point is that it's an objectively stupid choice to do something for less money. That is a bad financial decision. What is the rationale, please tell me, I want to know, for going to a job that may very well be a very shitty job to make less money than you could make by not doing that job? I got nothing. I mean, did this job show you loyalty and throw you some cash while they were shut down and cutting back? Maybe a small business couldn't do that, sure. But plenty of the big ass businesses that had to lay people off certainly could have. But you can bet your ass they didn't. So what do these people owe them? What do they owe me? What do they owe you? Nothing. Nothing at all is the appropriate answer. It's a right to work economy, isn't it? They're not contractually obligated to go back to work. They're making more money on unemployment. So this is where the blame part comes into our discussion of perspective. Who is to blame? The person who is making a smart financial choice by staying home and making more money? I don't think they're to blame at all. I think it would be dumb for them to go back to work. But even more importantly, why does it matter that we find someone to blame? Why do we have to point a finger at somebody? I mean, unless we are the small business owner who can't find someone to work for us, why do we care how others spend their time? Why this external focus? Because that external focus is not serving us. We, all of us out there, we'd be paying the same taxes whether the fast food worker that is staying home went back to work or not. If we're jealous, though, we're welcome to stay home too if we'd like. That's our freedom. That's our choice. If we want, we should go to work for a low-paying job in the service industry so the next time a pandemic comes around, we can get the same privileges, okay? Sound good? Because I don't really consider it a privilege to make $560 a week. No, that doesn't sound appealing to me out here in California. Okay, these people are not living in the lap of luxury for $560 a week in California, where to find a decent home under $400,000, that's pretty difficult. And sorry, guys, but $560 a week, it's not going to get you there. So if we're going to talk about blame, let's do so objectively. The worker is not to blame. If we have to blame somebody, they're not to blame. It is stupid for them to go to work for less money. And neither is the small business owner to blame. The market dictates what they can pay because they have to make money too. Unless it's a charity, but it's probably not. So who does that leave? Well, it leaves big business, of course. Particularly those big businesses that spend lobbying dollars to keep wages low. And of course, their pet scumbag politicians who work to achieve the objectives of the businesses for their own personal gain at the expense of their constituents. Okay, you want a conspiracy theory? There's one for you, except it's more like a scientific theory in that that's what's fucking happening. Okay, big business is behind this and their pet politicians that do their bidding. The system that they've established over years and years, this wasn't Trump's fault, this wasn't Bush's fault, this wasn't Obama's fault, this wasn't Clinton's fault, this was all their fault put together, okay? And all of the politicians at the state level and at the federal level who have been doing this for years. The system is what allows people to make more money on unemployment than a small business is able to pay them. The small businesses can't pay more. Or if they do, they have to cut into their own profits. And then, you know, that takes food off their table. So I don't give a shit if McDonald's can find workers. Good. Fuck you. I hope you can't find them. But I do care that the small restaurants can't. And it's companies like McDonald's who have created the situation where these small businesses can't afford to pay the workers a living wage. It's their fault. Okay. It's Walmart's fault. It's McDonald's fault. It's not people's fault. So stop blaming them. Stop being an asshole. Because fuck all the politicians that have weaponized this and then they've used it to turn people against one another while distracting from the fact that they and their corporate masters are the ones behind it to begin with. Not your neighbor, not you, not me, them. McDonald's. Okay. I'm not going to just pick on McDonald's, but all of them. Okay. I let myself get a little angered there, but it's frustrating when we let subjective shit distract from reality that then turns people against one another and really for no good reason. And it lends more power to tribalism and ultimately extremism and ultimately all the bullshit we see every day. Now, at some point, this unemployment issue will correct itself because the benefits are going to run out and people are going to need to work. Okay. That's going to happen. They're not going to go on forever. We can't afford for it to go on forever. The economy can't take it. And while I find it highly, unfortunately, unlikely that we'll take away any lessons from this at the societal level and implement any real necessary changes, the lessons for us, the individual, can still be learned. And the lessons we can take away, these lessons, they matter. And those lessons are that it's easy to blame and to point our fingers outward. But it's much more difficult to look inward and ask why we feel the need to blame in the first place and then analyze the roots of those feelings. Why am I pointing my finger at the neighbor who's staying home and not going to get a job that's going to pay him less than being on unemployment? That makes no sense. Look inward. Why are we doing that? Do you know why you're making that choice? Because it's easy to let our influences take the lead, and then we ignore objective information if that objective information doesn't contribute toward our preferred outcome. It's much, much, much more difficult to take the time to ask if we have motivation for something to be true, and whether or not we're then actively pursuing that end through motivated reasoning, because we're probably looking for things to justify it, looking for reasons to be mad at our neighbor, because we're mad that we're going to work every day and he's not. It doesn't make any sense for him to. And how is it any of our business? If you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at the people that caused it, the big businesses, their pet politicians. Fuck those guys. Seriously. Because while we might not learn the lesson as a society and we might not implement the necessary changes, hopefully we do eventually, and hopefully this, as things like this happen, we start to learn instead of just moving on and saying, fuck it. The most critical lesson for us, the individual, you, dear listener, and me, it pertains to our own well-being. And that lesson is that when we actively engage with things like this, like blaming and getting upset and fighting against masks and fighting against getting a vaccine and fighting against all these things, what we do, we're letting it affect us negatively. And what it does is it creates internal turmoil in strife, and we're not doing ourselves any favors by bucking against reality. And we're not working towards the best version of ourselves when we're distracted by bullshit that is not serving us and those to whom we're responsible. So whether it's masks, whether it's vaccines or workers on unemployment or any of our day-to-day choices we make or decisions we make or thoughts we have, there is usually an objectively best choice presented to us. And when we take the time to examine our motivations, and then we take all of the different perspectives into consideration, we'll often find that there is a different approach that would better serve us and those to whom we're responsible. I could have stuck with my initial opinion about masks after the CDC changed their guidance. But no way, I'm not going to listen to them. I'm going to go fight this and then end up on a YouTube video or on Facebook being one of those freaking people they call Karens, fighting with somebody for no reason. Somebody who doesn't want to be there, who's probably just got off of unemployment or they're about to be on unemployment. You know, why fight with your neighbor? It's not their fault, okay? So on that, hopefully, somewhat optimistic note, well, we've now about wrapped up with episode 10 of the Dirty Thoughts Let's Talk podcast brought to you by the Clean Thinkers. And I actually let my emotions get a bit of me there, right? My feelings influences kind of swayed my delivery there. So sorry about that, folks. But thanks again for tuning in. And once more, I genuinely appreciate you being here with me and the rest of the Clean Thinkers community, at least those of you who lasted this far and didn't get off the show when I told you to go. As mentioned before, and time again, all of our citations and our relevant information are in the show notes. And again, if you can't find them, they're also included in our weekly emails. And there's a lot of reading material for you in this week's notes, but please give it a look if you have any questions about the references that I cited, okay? Or if you just feel like learning something new, I'd be glad to talk with you about it, okay? Sign up for the email list, let me know. You can reply to it. It's not a do not reply list. And you can say, hey man, you know what? I think you're full of shit. We can talk about it. It'd be great. Or you can sign up for the program and we can talk about it in a coaching session, okay? And please don't forget, like I said, to check out our audiobook, Dirty Thoughts, Let's Talk, Volume 1. Volume 2 is underway, so stay tuned for the release date for that. So next week, we're going to return to our discussions on the tenets and principles of clean thinking. And we're going to do so through a discussion of another influence, and this will be our first external influence, our family and friends. This will be a fun one. But take care, and I look forward to speaking with you next week. Cheers.